Modern markets require modern investment approaches, and with Yield Street, that's what you'll get. Explore wealth-growing investments in art, real estate, venture capital, and more, with minimums starting at just $500 and targeting annual yields of up to 18%. Discover the difference a diverse portfolio makes and trade volatility for stability with Yield Street. Visit YieldStreet.com to get started. That's YieldStreet.com.
Hello, everybody. I'm Ed Robinson, and welcome to the 300th episode of The Robinson Show. On the program, I have Sylvia Hoffman. Sylvia is a member of the United States women's bobsledding team, winning a bronze medal in the two-women bobsled competition with Ilana Myers-Taylor at the 2022 Winter Olympics in Beijing, China. On the program, we talk about her introduction to bobsledding, how her previous athletic experiences prepared her for bobsledding. What were the COVID testing procedures like in Beijing? What were the dining options like in the Olympic Village? What advice was she given to handle the pressure of the Olympics? And how would she get more African-Americans and people of color involved in bobsledding and so much more? Sylvia is coming up after the break. I'm Ed Robinson, and you're listening to the 300th episode of The Robinson Show.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you 24/7 with supplies and solutions for every industry and access to product specialists ready to help. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
There's magic that happens when you get together in a Vrbo vacation home. It's the magic of spilled drinks and twirling hugs. It's inside jokes and loud shower singing and life advice and big sister real talk and laughing till you can't breathe. It's the feeling of relief because no matter who you are, there's nothing like spending time with the people you love. Vrbo, a place for together. Download the app to find yours. There's magic that happens when you get together in a Vrbo vacation home. It's the magic of spilled drinks and twirling hugs. It's inside jokes and loud shower singing and life advice and big sister real talk and laughing till you can't breathe. It's the feeling of relief because no matter who you are, there's nothing like spending time with the people you love. Vrbo, a place for together. Download the app to find yours.
Street King, yeah. They can get you anything. Uh-huh. New wheels for your ride if you want to be a Street King. Yeah.
Since that fat tax check is coming soon, get some custom wheels on your ride today. Street King will give you 90 days same as cash. Just pay them off when your tax check comes. Choose from the huge in-store selection of 24-inch wheels as low as $12.99. 22s as low as $9.99. Or rent or own your wheels from as low as $29 per week. No credit check. Located in Baton Rouge at 7221 Airline Highway, just north of Greenwell Springs Road. Google Street King or visit GoStreetKing.com.
New wheels for your ride if you want to be a Street King.
Ilana Myers-Taylor. She's already won silver in monobob. Will there be another medal here?
Oh, break with Sylvia Hoffman was trying to get a strong last step there, but we saw her falter a little bit, so she had to pull back on the sled to get in. She's a very talented athlete. Started in 2018 as a part of the next Olympic hopeful television show. But the question is, did that harm their velocity?
There's a big margin of advantage. Look at that, almost 1 second. Ilana Myers-Taylor is growing this advantage.
Beautiful line there in the corner nine. Ilana is now getting up to the training runs her competitors had as she misruns being in quarantine. Still a second ahead. With a clean top, Ilana Myers is going to maintain this lead on her way to a bronze medal.
Ilana Myers-Taylor said, I can't relax, I can't be complacent. I only operate in one mode, and that is attack mode.
A clean exit of 13. Ilana is fighting her way to another, a fifth Olympic medal for the U.S. bobsled team.
Ilana Myers-Taylor is guaranteed bronze. Into the lead by 0.8 seconds to Team USA. Hoffman and Myers-Taylor are going to stand on the podium.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the program. That audio was courtesy of the International Olympic Committee, the Olympics, and NBC Sports, and that was Ilana Myers-Taylor and Sylvia Hoffman winning the bronze medal in the two-woman bobsled competition at the 2022 Winter Olympics in Beijing, China. To talk more about that experience, as well as getting more African-Americans and people of color involved in bobsledding and amongst other things, we want to welcome her to the program. She is the bronze medalist from the two-woman bobsled competition representing the United States of America, Sylvia Hoffman. Sylvia, welcome to the program.
How you doing? Thank you for having me on today.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be on the program. So before we talk about the experience in Beijing, I want to start off from the beginning. What was your introduction like to the sport of bobsledding?
Well, I was transferring over from competing in Olympic weightlifting for those previous 8 years before my 4 years of bobsled. I was looking pretty good in weightlifting. I competed internationally for my first 2 years without any issue, and then it kind of started to go downhill. I started noticing that my learning for, like, the technical stuff wasn't really being taught, so it ended up being, like, an uphill battle for the last 5 years of my weightlifting career. And then 2 years before it ended, I hurt my back, and then I recovered from that, and then I, like, went on this crusade of, like, I got to make another international team. I got to see where I'm at. And I did do that. I did that within the year. I went to Taipei, represented Team USA there. But then in 2018, it was just like one of those come-to moments where you have to, like, really think about where you are in your career. And I noticed that my chances of making an Olympic team was kind of slim to none. So I started kind of just, like, thinking, like, what can I do? You know, like, what other sports are there? Is my athletic career up? You know, should I stop looking? Should I continue to go all out? And then the next month, the COPFL came around. There was an ad on Instagram. I had seen it that year before in 2017, but I was so focused on trying to, you know, like, make the Taipei team that, you know, I just said, you know, I'm not going to look at it. You know, maybe I'll do it again some other time. But then it came back around in 2018. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to give it a shot. And that's what I did. The bobsled coaches were there. Other NGBs were there, national governing bodies. And then the coaches were saying, well, hey, you know what? You can kind of fit in any one of these sports. Which one do you want to do? And I was like, well, I'm here for you guys to choose me. I have chosen my last two sports. And I was like, I'm at the point where, you know, I was 28 at the time. I'm like, I'm 28. I want to have a coach say, hey, you are the perfect fit for this particular sport. And that's what happened with bobsled. They said, well, hey, come out. We have a rookie camp coming out. You know, let's see how you do. I won rookie push championship that year in 2018. That following month, I won national push championships. That month after that, I set a new push standard for Brakeman coming in by pushing the fastest times in our team trials, making a national team and the World Cup team within my first year. So I was put in a position to do really well over the next 4 years leading up to the Beijing Games, and I did. I became the number one break woman over the last 3.5 years. I've set international records, push start records with my pilot, and then I've also won World Cup medals. I won a gold, silver, bronze. So I was very successful under Ilana Myers-Taylor and Kaylee Humphreys being my pilots on the World Cup seasons. And then it led me to my fourth year in a quad where it's Olympic year. You know, it's the second year of the COVID seasons is what we kind of called it because there were so many changes that happened within those last 2 years at a quad. But we went to the games and we handled it. I raced mostly with Ilana Myers-Taylor my third year. And then I raced mostly with Kaylee my fourth year. But then going into the games, they paired me with Ilana Myers-Taylor. And, you know, we had the whole scare of, like, the COVID. You know, she caught COVID going through travel. I wasn't able to get on the ice until our official training days. You know, she wasn't able to get on the ice until her first official training day for monobob. So it was a very stressful time for both of us. But I think because we believed in one another and we put the time in to do the best that we could for the games, we just kind of trusted our training, and that's what we did. We took it one run at a time, one heat at a time, and then one race day at a time. And each day, I could just see the confidence in Ilana just growing. And as a brakeman, you know, we always want that. We want to see that, you know, because our pilots are the one that's going to be, you know, like getting us down the hill as fast as possible after we get the sled off the block as fast as possible. So the more I've seen Ilana just like kind of get back into her her routine of just like being her, being great, you know, being fearless and just being confident in herself, I was like, oh yeah, there she is. And I was like super excited. And when I seen what she did for Monobob once the races started, you know, the first heat, it was just like, okay, you know, just kind of getting the feel. But then that second heat of Monobob, she just turned it on. I was just like, wow. And then the third and fourth heat, she just lit up the track. And I was like, wow, that is what every brakeman wants to see going into their own race, because we were to do the two-woman bobsled race event immediately after the Monobob races that following day. So it was like a quick turnaround. For her, it was 10 days of sliding. For me, it was, I think, like 4 or 5 days of sliding. So it was a bunch, but we got it done. And, you know, like racing with Alana, she has a legacy of being a start record champion. She's kind of undefeated in a lot of those areas for start record. So to be the number one brake woman going into the season and then being able to push with her in Beijing, that was an honor of me to share that particular moment and that time to be, you know, now I'm the fastest brake woman in the world. And that's one of my goals that I wanted to hit at the end of the year, at the end of the quad, at the games. So I'm super excited that we were able to come out with a bronze medal out of all of the struggles that we've been through, you know, the entire 4 years of training, you know, taking time off and then coming back and then COVID stuff. You know, like, it was just a lot. But then once we crossed the finish line, it was like a huge relief for me just to know, like, hey, you know what? You did it. You did it. You gave your all. You know, you changed your program, you know, like the last month right leading into the games. You were able to get everything done, no injuries, no nothing. You were able to push the fastest start times in the world on the track. It was, you know, like, it was a beautiful moment for me. And to embrace Alana at that moment after the finish, it was just like, thank you, Jesus. You know, we did it. It's over. We can take a moment and just like breathe and just and enjoy what we did and what we accomplished, continuing that legacy of also having the USA women's bobsled team meddling in the two-woman event, because we have medaled in each two-woman event since it was entered into the games, I think, in 2002. So that in itself is like, good job. So we were able to get a medal out of that, out of the three medals that were given out entirely. So we're happy about those accolades. And, you know, went to the New York Stock Exchange and rang the bell. Huge honor of that.
Awesome. Congratulations to you and Ilana on that amazing feat. We're going to get more into Beijing and all of the logistics of the race in just a bit. I want to talk about your previous athletic experiences. You mentioned that you had competed in weightlifting before you transitioned over to bobsledding. And I looked at a bio that you competed as a college basketball player. Did your previous athletic experiences prepare you for the sport of bobsledding?
Oh, most definitely. I believe that basketball, especially growing up with it, I feel like it's a very good sport to get into. It has a lot to offer, not just teamwork within, you know, like just kind of like social teamwork, working together as a team, but you also get the physical stuff, which is the running, jumping, bounding, sprinting, change of speed, change of direction. It is a contact sport because you're physically touching other people. You're physically getting in front of them. So it offers so many different areas of training to where you get that power development, and you can also get the speed development and reaction time. But I also did track and field when I was in junior high school. So I was able to get the speed development after basketball seasons were over with. But then when I got into weightlifting in college, it was, okay, not doing weightlifting anymore. Basketball anymore. So I did 4 years of basketball. And you're able to do that on the higher levels, which means you're also growing in strength and conditioning. And then your mental aspect is also changing as well. But then with the weightlifting, a lot of people think, I feel like weightlifting comes off as like, you got to be super strong, you know, like physically, you know, like big muscular people. But when you actually get off into the sport of Olympic weightlifting, there's different weight classes. For instance, there's 8 different weight classes right now, and there's tons of different sizes of people. And you can compete in whichever weight class that suits you the best. whether it's competitively or, you know, just wanted to be a part of something, weightlifting offers that. But it also offers you the mental stability aspect of trying something and then trying it again, knowing that it's difficult, knowing that you have this weight above your head, it's heavy, anything that happens, but you know how to get out of the way. So it's like, well, you can try, and if you fail, you can always try again. Weightlifting gives you that repetition of pushing yourself to the limit and then really like setting a goal for yourself and saying, well, hey, you know what? I just hit a new personal best, but the technique wasn't all, you know, wasn't all there. And, you know, I've been training, I feel really good. You know what? I think I can hit about maybe like 4 or 5 more kilos. So then you get another goal and you're like, you know what? I can do, you know, like 50 kilos now. I just did 45, but I know I can do 50. So now you're challenging yourself to better yourself. And that's what weightlifting teaches you inadvertently without even thinking about it. You're practicing all these things of pushing yourself, being confident in yourself, you know, like trusting your abilities and then just going out and doing it, you know, like, and then without thinking, you know, thinking about it, like, you know, just all the way through. It's just like a snatch takes 2 seconds to complete. There's no thinking in that. You approach the bar and you know exactly what you want to do and you do it. I think weightlifting taught me a lot. It taught me how to control my emotions, my athletic abilities, and it also helped me understand my body a lot more. Because it's a weight-bearing sport, I had to maintain my body weight. I had to change it. You know, I had to gain weight. I had to lose weight. So I also was able to figure out what foods work best for me, what happens to my body when I lose too much weight, what happens to my body when I gain too much weight. I was able to learn those smaller details of myself. And, you know, like with weightlifting, sometimes your larger muscles might not even feel bad. It's the smaller muscles that actually kind of get fatigued. And then you start to understand how your body works. So I was able to learn all those things within weightlifting on top of my knowledge in basketball. It was 15 years of basketball, 8 years of weightlifting. And then once I got back into a running like sport, like bobsled, you know, after taking 8 years off with sprinting and running and jumping, you know, I was like, you know what, this isn't bad. I was like, this is actually, you know, pretty easy. I was like, I think I got it, you know, just learn the sport and from weightlifting to bobsled, and then understand what needs to be done and when. I think that gave me a lot of success within the sport very quickly. And then having a plan for myself, a 4-year plan, a 2-year plan, making sure that I'm covering each milestone every year, and then saying, hey, you know, like to my team and my coach, I'm like, hey, this is what I want to do this year. This is what I feel like I can accomplish. Within my first year, my first track coach and I, we spoke about it, and she was like, you know what, I think you can drop a 10th by next year. I was like, you know what, I think you're right, because I hadn't had any sprinting coaching at all. So I had a lot to gain just from the sprinting aspect and then just learning the technique of bobsled itself. And guess what? I dropped a 10th after my first year. I dropped 500, I think, after my second year, 300 after my third. And then going into my last year, I dropped 1 to 200 in my push time. So it's like when you create a path for yourself for success, you're bound to be successful because that's what you're seeking.
Awesome. That's great that you hit those numbers right there. And I want to talk about a medical condition that you were diagnosed with, scoliosis. Can you explain to the listeners what scoliosis is all about?
Yeah, so scoliosis is the curvature of the spine. It's not a disease or anything like that. It can happen either by genetics. Sometimes someone in your family can also have scoliosis from your past, well, you know, like grandparents or someone. Like my grandmother, she has scoliosis. My mother does not, but then I ended up having scoliosis. It was diagnosed when I was 12. And then also sometimes it's just related to bad posture or even injury. So I think mine was maybe a little bit of the both. Maybe it was a little bit of bad posture. I know like things change when you get into junior high. I blamed it on the desk situation because you can't really scoot your chair up all the way like you do when you're in elementary. So I kind of blamed it a little bit on that and then just some growth spurts. And then, you know, when I learned about my family history, you know, I was just like, oh, well, my grandmother also had scoliosis. And they said, hey, sometimes it can skip a generation. And I feel like that's what it did. And I think it was just a combination of it all. But that was found when I was in 7th grade going into 8th grade. I was getting a physical and, you know, they did the typical, you know, like the scoliosis check where you have to, you know, like you bend over and you touch your toes and they kind of see what your spine looks like. And they caught it. They said it was an early sign. It was caught at 39 degrees, and then I wore a back brace provided by, you know, like Scottish Rite Hospital, in Dallas, Texas. They gave me a back brace to use because initially I was told, like, well, you know what, hey, you might not be able to make it that far in athletics because you have this particular, you know, like, ailment or whatever for your back. And I'm like, well, that kind of sucks, you know, because I'm very athletic. You know, I pictured myself being in Olympics one day. I was heavily involved in sports, you know, so to hear those words from, you know, like, for a few medical people, I was just like, wow, you know, that's kind of sucks. And then, you know, some other people that weren't educated in the matter, it also sucks. But when I went to Scottish Rite, you know, they said, well, hey, if you wear this back brace 16 to 18 hours a day, you're going to be able to still do sports and do all that stuff. Just take it off, wear it mostly when you sleep, mostly when you're sitting in class. And then you have like a few hours out through the day where you can just kind of just like, you know, not have to wear it. You can just kind of like breathe easy. And I was like, you know what, I might have a chance. And then that's what I did. So my curve went down from 39 degrees to 35 degrees within that, I think within like 3 years of me wearing a back brace. And the thing about wearing it is you want to wear it when you're growing. So then that way, as you're getting taller, as you're growing, as you're getting bigger, your spine is also not getting worse. It can get better. It can stay the same, but it won't get worse if you're wearing it the way you're supposed to be wearing it. So that's what I did all through high school. And then my 4 years of college, I got an x-ray after I tried to apply for the Air Force. I had passed my ASVAB with flying colors. They said, you know, like, hey, you can do whatever you want. You can fly a plane if you want. You know, let's go see Mets. Let's get your medical stuff taken care of, and then, you know, let's get you signed up. And I was like, cool, this is great. And then Mets saw my back, and they said, hey, we can't accept you. I was like, oh, man. So it was like, it was a big blow. And I was just like, well, I just played basketball and all these other sports. And I was just like, that doesn't count for anything. Well, and they said, well, hey, let's see what we can do. Let's see, you know, like what's acceptable. And they said that they can only accept a 30 degree curve or better. And mine was at 35. So within my 4 years of basketball and not wearing my, my back brace within college, it hadn't gotten any worse, which was also like, so it was like a happy and sad moment at the same time. But I was like, you know what, it's not over. And then I joined weightlifting. So it was like I joined Olympic weightlifting like immediately after. And then also with weightlifting, we practice perfect posture. We practice being more upright. Your head, your chest is up, your shoulders are back, you know, your head is up, your eyes are forward. So we practice those postures. And it, like, I didn't even think about it at the time when I first joined, but it actually helped my posture with my back. A lot. And I appreciate being in weightlifting because I was like, well, I wouldn't have, you know, known certain things if, you know, I didn't do this particular sport. My spine is at a 42 degree curve. And that's not bad. I was like, you know what, for it to be only 3 degrees worse than what it was first diagnosed at when I was back in junior high, I was like, you know what, that's a win. that's a win. So a lot of the medical staff here at the USOPC, the United States Olympic and Paralympic Committee, we've been working together over the last few years, especially with bobsled, because it's kind of so weightlifting corrects my posture. Bobsled kind of does the opposite because I'm hunched over in the sled. I'm pushing, you know, I'm bent over the whole time. So it's actually the opposite of what I've been trying to practice with my posture. So we started getting together and we got we reached out to an orthopedic in town in Lake Placid and we were able to get a back brace made for me. And I'm really excited because I was actually able to try it on. And I'm really excited about it because I was like, I have one as an adult and seeming as though I had no chiropractic treatment, no physical therapy, no massage therapy when I was younger growing up with it. I was like, can you imagine if I actually have a brace and able to get all those types of treatments and then be able to be in a brace and it's also corrected within it? I was like, let's see how that goes. So we're all excited about that. And I get to try that out like immediately. So I'm happy to have one as an adult.
That's awesome. I learned a lot from what you were telling me about scoliosis, it being the curvature of the spine. That's amazing that I learned something new. I didn't know as far as the degrees of the spine and whatnot. It's amazing. You opened my eyes to something new. Again, I heard about it, but I wasn't quite sure just the ins and outs of what it was. And thank you for explaining that to me and to the listeners out there. And I want to talk now about, of course, we all know about the pandemic and COVID and how it impacted your life. It impacted everybody's life, and it was no exception to the rule as far as athletics were concerned. So I want to ask you, what were the COVID testing procedures like in Beijing?
Well, we got tested. We had to do testing every day. You could do it any time of the day, I think anywhere between like maybe 6 and 11 o'clock, something like that, 6 a.m. to 11 p.m. I just did it whenever I was on my way to breakfast every morning. It was pretty simple. It was a mouth swab. So they just did the PCR that way. And, you know, you get tested, and then that's it. So it was pretty much no news is good news. And then if you were notified of something, that means, you know, like you probably tested positive or inconclusive. I didn't have any of those problems. Didn't know anyone that had any of those problems either. But, I mean, the testing was very simple. We did it at the village, and that was pretty much it. To get to Beijing, we had to test at certain times, so then that way it would be valid at certain times when we either caught our flight or arrived in Beijing. So that was pretty much the most important part of testing to even get into the village, was the test before we traveled at certain times on certain days. And then once we got to China, once we got into the Beijing airport, we COVID tested again. And then we go into like kind of like just a holding quarantine just until our tests get back from travel. And then that kind of determines, you know, like whether you're clear to like roam the village or whether you have to stay in your room and quarantine until you get like a couple more negative COVID tests, or like if they're trying to determine whether you have COVID or not and if you're contagious or not. So with my test, I didn't have any issues going through travel, but Alana did. I mean, we came from the same location. We sat on different parts of the airplane, and then she ended up catching COVID through travel, whether it's whenever she landed, whenever, I'm not sure. It was probably, I guess, before the PCR test at the airport, but she ended up catching COVID on her way over, and then she had to quarantine when she got there. And I think she went into like a holding hotel that had, you know, I guess, different procedures from anywhere else that you were being held for quarantine purposes. But for me, I stayed at the village, went straight to the village, did my temporary, you know, like wait for it quarantine part for our test results to come back. And then after that, I was free to go. And from then on, it was COVID tests every day. And I think if we missed one, we might, I don't know what the issues were with that, but if someone missed a test, I think they might get in trouble for some reason. But I think for the most part, everyone's tested every day. And, you know, just to help with keeping up with your own testing times. And then, like, if something got lost on their end, they just recommended that we take a photo of our badge and of, like, the tube, the number, that's the barcode that's on the tube for testing. So that's all we did. And to me, it went pretty smoothly. It was pretty straightforward. Like, test. If you don't test, then you'll probably have to go into quarantine.
Yeah, it's interesting because I know watching the Olympic coverage, and I know since the pandemic has happened, I know the Chinese have been very adamant about the testing. And, you know, with the Olympics being on the world stage, I know they were very prideful in making sure that they didn't want any mishaps as a result of that. So that's why I asked you about those testing procedures. And I'm glad that Ilana was able to beat that. And, of course, you and her were able to go on and win that medal, which we'll talk about in a little bit later. But, you know, I think one of the interesting things, Sylvia, about the Olympics is the dining options at the village. And I happened to see a few of the items that were served, but can you tell me, and most importantly, tell the listeners out there, what were the dining options like in the Olympic Village?
Oh, I think they were fine. I think everyone has their own personal opinion of the dining hall. I remember my cousin even like sent me a text one day. It was very random. And she was like, "Are you okay?" And I was like, "Yeah, why?" And then she's just like, "I heard that you guys weren't really getting fed out there." And she's like, "So I figured I should like send you a text and check on you." And I was just like, "No," I was like, "we're getting fed every day." And so she like sent me a photo, and it was like of a to-go tray with like a few pieces of food in there. I was just like, well, that person didn't want to eat, because, you know, it was just interesting because I was like, we have a cafeteria full of food. It's open 24/7. There's also a Pizza Hut and a KFC that's also open 24/7. So it was just like they had tons of drinks. They had the drink machines, they had a refrigerator for drinks. They had, you know, like, it was kind of cool, actually. There was a few fridges where the top half of it was for hot beverages and the bottom half was for cold beverages. So they had, like, lattes and coffee. in a hot beverage area, and then they had like water, soda, orange juice, stuff like that in the cold area. So that's what they have for drinks, and then it goes into like the bread section, the cereal section. There's a whole area of breads. You can heat it. There's condiments for it. There's a salad section, and then there's like four or five different stations of food. There's like world-type foods. There's Asian cuisine. There's halal cuisine. There's fruits. There's a dessert area. And then there's like the specialty locations. There's like two or three specialty locations that you can go to. So it was pretty wide variety in the food that they had. I think the variety of food was a little bit greater than the drink selection, but they also had coffee machines. If you wanted to have like an espresso or a latte or a cappuccino, you can do that as well. So I think that was really good for them. But I mean, now initially, like, so I got there on a 27th when they actually started opening up the doors for athletes and coaches and staff to go into the villages. So I was there pretty early. So I was there for beginning of before the opening ceremony and then after the closing ceremony. Now I want to say at the beginning, you know, it was kind of a little iffy where they didn't have certain like condiments or, you know, like dressings and stuff like that. You know, like there was an issue where it was just like, where's the salt? You know, like, so there was stuff like that. So they definitely didn't over season the food. They left it pretty open for the athletes to try to do. It was a little bland at times, but it was like, you know, you can't over season everything for hundreds of athletes that are coming in. So I think that the Beijing Olympic Committee did the best that they could to supply the athletes in the villages with everything that they needed, because after a few days of being in a village, they actually started getting a little bit more things. So they started having butter and honey and, you know, like salt, ketchup. They had hot sauce as well. They had different vinaigrettes. So they ended up expanding their kitchen and their choices. And then also even like the specialty areas where you can like make an omelet station. They started having extra ingredients at the omelet station. So it was like kind of like one of those things where like, hey, this is what we have. Tell us if you need something else. Tell us if we need to improve anything. And I think that they did that. I think they did the best that they could. I think everyone's entitled to their own opinions of the villages. I stayed in the middle village in Yanqing district. And then there were two other ones. There was one in Beijing, which was kind of like the lower village. And then there was the upper village. I think the upper village they had, I heard there were some issues up there. I think a few people had like food poisoning or something like that. I think there was a few biathletes that had some issues with the eating up there. But it's like, I don't know. I wasn't there. I don't know what they ate. I don't know if it was the same stuff every day. I don't know, like, something could have been cross-contaminated, anything. But then you have to think about it. It's like there's hundreds of athletes that eat there, that and coaches and staff that also eat there. So it's like, I don't know what the percentage is of people that had bad experiences to the good experiences. But I think for the most part, my experience, it was fine. I'm not too picky. And, you know, like, if I wanted to do something, you know, like different, you know, let's just say an omelet or something, I just grabbed the different ingredients, you know, from each area, the cheeses, the vegetables, anything like that, the meats. And then I just gave it to the guy at the omelet station. He said, okay, cool. And he doesn't, so he'd make it. So I think my experience with the cafeteria and the food that they served, I think it was completely fine.
I want to stay just with the dining options at the village for a moment. What were the meals that you enjoyed during your time there?
I had a variety. I try not to eat the same thing every day. It just depends on how I felt. You know, it depended on the day, depending on what I had going on, training. I mean, I had pizza every so often. I had KFC sandwiches every so often. The Asian cuisine was actually, like, I think that was probably, like, the best station to go to. The cuisine there was pretty good. But I just tried to maintain a diverse diet while I was there, just to make sure I wasn't eating the same thing every day, and then getting tired of eating it, and then saying, well, I don't have anything else to eat, and then there's issues with diet problems. But then we also had the Athlete Resource Center. So on top of the dining hall, Team USA had its own athlete resources where we had snacks and foods and meals to go. We had stuff like that. We had noodles. We had we had like meal packs where you can just heat it up. There's pasta, there's rice, there's risotto, there's other stuff that we could eat. I mean, our nutritionist, Megan, she started making peanut butter and jelly. That was nice. So it's like, you know, we kind of just switched it up. You know, we made sure that, you know, we got what we needed. And, you know, if we needed something more, we would let her know. And I think between having the athlete resource center and then having a cafeteria and then also having facilities at the track to eat at and to snack at as well, and then the KFC and the Pizza Hut, I think with those four things, I feel like I was kind of well taken care of. I was taken care of on a rounded basis with everything.
Awesome. You know, I just want to ask you two more questions about the dining for a moment. You mentioned about the Asian cuisine, and I know Beijing, of course, is a major metropolitan area. Now, I know because of the COVID restrictions, you and the other athletes weren't really able to kind of venture outside of the village. Were you able to sample any of the Chinese cuisine, maybe some duck or maybe any type of Szechuan?
I like duck. They had duck and they had lamb. Those are two meats that I eat. I don't have a problem with either one of them. I think after the opening ceremonies, we were able to go to the Beijing village. We had food there, and it was my first time being there. They had some nice selections there. So it was like different village, different flavors. They had a curry dish that I had that night, and like I said, I've only had one meal there, but it was really good. I had a little bit of everything, but it was nice just to try different stuff. So I wasn't too picky on anything, really. It was just like, you know, if you see it, you like it, just go get it. I love food, so it wasn't that hard to kind of make sure I was being fed.
Well, one last question about the dining options, and I'm not going to mention this name of this particular business, but let's just say it specializes in burgers, fries, and hot fudge sundaes. Was the presence of this restaurant visible in the village?
I'm not sure about where that is. It wasn't in my village, so I have no idea.
Okay. Okay, fair enough. We'll move along. I want to – now, you mentioned – you talked about the sport of bobsledding and, you know, preparing, making that transition, going from track and field to basketball and then going from weightlifting to the sport of bobsledding. Can you explain to the listeners out there what is the training like when you're getting ready to compete in bobsledding?
Well, one, bobsled as a brakeman – and as a driver, there's three areas of training, really. Physical training outside of being on the ice itself. There's the strength aspect where, you know, like you have your strength conditioning, you know, that's more so like weight-bearing equipment, your weightlifting or something like that. And then there's the speed area where you have your sprint workouts because that is important. Sprinting is it's a big portion of pushing, so you have to be able to do that particular aspect of you know, competition. So there's the strength, there's the speed, and then there's also the pushing aspect, which is very important. Pushing in any object actually requires a little bit more energy that you never thought that you would need or use. So pushing, it kind of like takes a little bit more out of you. So you have to condition for that as well. You can't just do like weightlifting and sprinting and think it's going to be fine, and then here you are, you know, stepping up on a push track or the ice in the ice house or something or a race and you haven't pushed. Your numbers will show that because pushing is a part of the sport. It's a big part of the sport. It is pretty much my number one. I might not be the best sprinter. I might not be the best weightlifter. I am a pretty good weightlifter, pretty decent. At the end of the day, pushing is what matters because that is what you're doing in competition. That is what's going to help you get down the hill as fast as possible. So my particular concentrations are pushing and, you know, the other two areas of my training, which is sprinting and weightlifting, those complement pushing. But when I'm not in season or when I'm, you know, in off season or having downtime, it is important to not push. It's important to let your body rest a little bit and not do an overkill and tire yourself out. So I do all those things in the off season in rotation throughout the week. I get with my coaches. We plan it out. We see which days work best. We see what numbers work best, which speeds work best. And then we get down and test things. I'm a big fan of testing. I'm very analytical. I'm also an engineer. So it's, for me, I'm like, I put everything together. And when I'm doing things athletically, I want things to work. So when I create plans for myself for success, you know, like I test things out, and you know, if it works, I'll test it out to see if it was just me in that particular moment. If it doesn't work, I do the same thing. So I can do a process of elimination to make sure that I'm actually getting the most out of my training going into competition.
Very interesting right there. And I want to stay just with the sport of bobsledding and just the training. You mentioned two positions, the pilot and the brakeman. Can you explain the positions and the duties of the pilot and the brakeman?
Yeah, so the pilot, they're in control of driving the sled down the hill as fast as possible and also as safe as possible for their crew, which could either be themselves with the monobob, with monobob. There could be two people, that's two men and two women, or there's a four-person sled, you know, it's four men right now. So they're in charge of getting the sled down the hill as fast as possible. They're the ones that seize the track. Because they're the one that's actually receiving all the visuals, the drive, they actually have to learn to track a little bit more, like a lot different from the brakeman or from the other push athletes. They study a lot more. They go over film of the entire track or over specific curves and profiles of curves in the track. They make sure and study that. They memorize it. You know, sometimes they'll walk down from, you know, they'll go top down from the track. So they'll go from curve 1 to maybe curve 15, or, you know, sometimes they'll walk up the track. They'll go from maybe like curve 15 to the start ramp, just so they're knowing the track backwards and forwards, because the better that they know the track, the faster they're going to be able to get down the hill. And then they also, the sled setup is a little bit more in their control, because they're the ones that's driving it. They're the ones that's studying it. They know what it feels like to go down the hill. So they kind of lead the charge and, you know, making sure, you know, like the runner choices are what they need to be. And then as far as like the alignment for, you know, like the runners and everything like that. So the runners are metal, you know, they're not blades, but we can call them blades. They're very rounded. They're not sharp, but it's the metal that touches the ice that actually helps you go that much faster. If those runners are scratch, you can go slower because it catches on the ice, and so you lose hundreds of seconds, hundreds of tenths of a second. But if they're as smooth as possible, that's what helps you go as fast as possible. So these are also some of the things that the pilots will lead within the sled preparation and race preparation to make sure that everything is good going down the hill for race day. The brakemen, they do a little bit of the same, but they don't do as many track walks as a pilot might do. It's not necessary because they're not looking at the track. They don't have to visually look at every single time they go down the hill. But it's important that the brakeman knows the track. They know how many curves there are. They know what direction the curves are going, because that helps the riding position for the brakeman and the pilot to get down the track as fast as possible. Because if you're fighting the sled tends to get slower, and then you just lose time the whole time. So you have to know what what's coming in a way to where you're helping the pilot and not hindering the pilot get down fast. We also do, I'm a brakeman. You also help with the sled maintenance. You work on it. You take things apart. You put things back together. You align it, you weigh the sled, you know how much the sled weighs. That's just a part of bobsled itself. And then also as a brakeman, when the pilot is doing the track walks, they tend to do a track walk before, you know, they take a run or training or sliding. That's what we call training sliding. Before sliding, they'll help with the sled and bringing it up to the top. So while the pilot is doing the track walk, the brakeman will bring the sled from the garage all the way up to the top of the track. We'll flip it over. We'll get it ready. Just so we can, like, so by the time the pilot gets up there, which is probably like 30 some minutes, the sled is already ready. Everyone has everything that they need for sliding. We start warming up, and then, you know, eventually it's time to slide. We get the sled, put it on wheels, get it onto the ice, and then we flip it back on down to the ice, and then we go down the hill. So that's kind of like the routine of what we do to make sure that everything is ready for sliding and for race day.
awesome. Thank you so much for explaining that. Very interesting right there. And I want to talk up now about winning in an Olympic medal. You and Ilana definitely did your thing in Beijing, winning the bronze medal in the two-woman bobsled competition. Congratulations on that. So just tell everybody, well, what's it like winning in an Olympic medal?
I think it's a very beautiful moment. It can be once in a lifetime, depending on how often you go for it, depending on your situations. But it was very relieving for me. I had, you know, always wanted to go to the Olympics, you know, and then also be able to win a medal. And then, you know, obviously preferably gold. You know, we all go for gold. We won gold when we crossed the finish line and we got bronze. We had both been through so much. So for us to be able to lay down the fastest start times in the world on the track, not once but twice, and then lay down some fire heat from Ilana, you know, like just – I mean, for me and for E, I know it was a very special moment. It was some difficult times leading up to it. You know, we had a bunch going on, changes of plans, not sliding, COVID, change of programming, you know, just like trying to get physically fit. It was a lot. And we went through a bunch. You know, she had her son Nico the second year of the quad. I think I got injured, I think, the second year of the quad as well. So it was like, you know, there was like ups and downs for both of us throughout the whole thing. And then for us to get paired together, go through what we did literally in Beijing, and then come out training and race day and just like lay it all out there, give it our all. We really put it together. And it really meant a lot for me to be in those moments because I'm like, wow, you know, we did it. You know, we went through all of this and we did it. To come out with the two-woman bobsled medal of our entire team, you know, like that in itself was a lot. It meant a lot to me, and that's a lot to E. The Federation, as much work as they put in to try to help us get in the best situation as possible for medaling. We had two pilots that were medal favorites on the team, and it was like, you know, both of us could have, like, you know, we could have had two pilots medal. We had one, and it happened to be me and Ilana in that bobsled. So for me, it was just like a relief. It was a big relief. And, you know, I just took in all the moments I could while I was down there, and I had, you know, teammates and my fellow competitors, you know, like they always kind of came around and just like, you did it, you know, giving me hugs and, you know, just saying, hey, you know what, all this, look at all this stuff that happened. Look, you just got a bronze. So it was just a moment, you know, it's one of those special moments in your life where you have to take it all in, you know, just like piece by piece and like really just try to like remember that feeling of what happened when you crossed the finish line, what happened when you received that gold, that bronze medal on the podium, you know, like Ilana put it around my neck and then I put it around her neck and I was just like, oh wow, you know, this is cool. And, you know, I'm just like dabbing the air and I'm just having a ball out there and just really happy that we were able to pull it off.
Awesome. Congratulations again on that achievement. Like you said at the beginning, you know, it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity just to compete in the Olympics. But when you win a medal, man, that's definitely an icing on the cake right there, considering everything that's currently happening in our world. And we know the Olympics are definitely pressure-filled. It's definitely, you know, the Olympics are no small task. I mean, just getting there, but being there, it's definitely definitely no small potato. So what advice were you given to handle the pressure of being in the Olympics?
I mean, I kind of try to keep things the same. But I think each Olympian that I have ever spoken to, they all said the same thing was don't change anything. And I'm a big fan of that. So that was pretty much the only real advice was just don't change anything. Whatever you were doing before to get there, do the same thing. You know, no processes change, no program change, but I had to change my program because it needed to be changed for the best results for Ilana. Because my motto is, if you want to do high performance things, you got to your program has to match that. And initially, because I was racing with Kaylee the entire season, and only one race with E, I had to change my program, and it had to be changed very quickly. So that was probably the only thing that was changed throughout the entire process. But I mean, to be honest, it's another competition. I've been kind of, you know, let's just say prepped for sort of this nature to where you have to just come out and perform. don't overthink it. You know, like, it's the same people that you've been competing against the last 4 years, you know, so to kind of overthink stuff in that way, it can be distracting. So my biggest thing was just get my program together so then that way I can help produce the best results in the push. And everything else just kind of like will work itself out because I'm very diligent in learning the track and walking it and knowing what my riding position needs to be. I have a lot of unconventional things that I do that a lot of people don't do. They've questioned it several times, and I'm just like, hey, this is my process. And then once they see the fruition of everything that I've been doing, they're just like, oh, okay, got it. You know, so it's one of those things where, again, don't change anything, do you. You know, and then just make sure you're focused. You know, I think that's the biggest thing, is eat, sleep, and train properly.
For those that aren't familiar with the sport of bobsledding, what do you tell them about the sport?
I first introduced it as, you know, a winter sport. A lot of people, they'll kind of know once you say, like, well, you know, there's a sled and you jump in it and you go down the hill. Half the people will kind of know what you're talking about. They've seen something of like that on TV, but they just didn't really know exactly what it was until they hear the name. And then you tell them, like, hey, you know, this is what bobsled is. And then, you know, if they're still like, if they say, hey, like, well, what's that? I tend to just go straight to a video or a photo. I think that's the best way to do it. And then they usually say, oh, yeah, I know that sport. You know, so a lot of people do know about bobsled, but they kind of forget the name scheme that goes with it. Like, I think someone asked me the other day, is it bobsled or bobsleigh? I'm like, well, depending on where you're from, you can say whichever one, but both of them the same. But it's just breaking down the sport and say, hey, you know, it's a winter sport. It's somewhat of a niche sport. And I go through the process of just kind of showing them, hey, this is what I do. And then a lot of people, I want to say about 9.5 out of 10 people, yeah, after watching like a photo or a video of what I do, if they weren't really sure of like what I was talking about, then they're like, oh, I know what that is. So it's pretty straightforward. I just try to keep things simple. And I try not to get too involved unless they start asking questions. And then I'll just tell them, I was like, hey, you know what, this is, you know, I'll just answer each question that they have.
Awesome. And then I know, you know, we've seen an emergence of African-Americans and people of color being more involved in the sport of bobsledding. I mean, we could see as early as far as African-American women within the early 2000s in the Olympics with Vonetta Flowers. But in your opinion, how do we get more African-Americans and people of color being involved in the sport of bobsledding to join you and the likes of an Ilana Myers-Taylor and, of course, Lauren Williams and Asia Evans, and then with Jasmine Finn, later Victorian. So how do we get more African-Americans and people of color involved in the sport of bobsledding?
I think the best way to do that is to have a fountain event, be out in the community or different events, you know, like whether it's corporate-wise or school-wise, and just get our faces out there. I think that's the easiest way to do it outside of TV, because not everyone watches everything on TV, and so not everyone's going to catch everything related to bobsled or anything related to bobsled. Different regions play different things. I had people text and email me or message me saying, hey, I wasn't able to watch it, or, you know, they're on Facebook and they're saying, you know, they're having conversations with other people like, yeah, I didn't play. They played hockey. They did, you know, so depending on the region that you live in, you might not even see the sport, even if it's playing live, even if it's a live race. So I think the best way to do that is just to get out in the community, invite us out. You know, like we're also trying to work to get out there as well, to be seen, and to just to show our faces and then show our tell our stories and say, hey, this is what I did. This is what I accomplished. This is how I got into the sport. These are the other sports that led me to this sport, because bobsled, usually it's a second sport, just because the sleds weigh so much weight, you have to go so fast. And so a lot of people, if they're, you know, like if they're still in high school, they don't have that physical strength yet, or they don't have that full speed yet. It's like if you go to a track meet and then, you know, someone's 26 years old or 23, 25 years old, and, you know, like they're flying, you know, like it's a lot different from high school. You won't see those same numbers out of a lot of people in grade school that you would see on the college level. So a lot of things is, you know, a lot of people will come from different sports, and so we can kind of start relating to those other sports. So I came from basketball. I did weightlifting. So my weightlifter friends are just like, oh, you know what? Hey, you know what? Maybe I should try bobsled. And, you know, so I just say, hey, you know what? I think you should. But then I'm also honest with them. I'm like, well, have you ever ran? Have you ever done any speed training? And if it's like a no, then I say, well, hey, you need these things because it is a sport based on speed. And if you don't have speed, it's going to be very difficult for you to make teams. So I'll educate them in that process of how to do that. And then, you know, obviously I'm from basketball. So I would go back to my basketball communities. I'd go want to speak to the college coaches or the athletes and say, hey, this is a sport. I think you should try it, see what you got. And then, you know, you can still do basketball. Basketball is all year round. Bobsled is a winter sport, and it's basically literally October through like maybe March. So it has to be cold outside. You know, so there's different times of the year you can do different things. But I think it's just a matter of getting out there in the community and showing your face.
Awesome. And again, this was great. Thank you so much, Sylvia, for taking time out of your busy schedule to be on the program. And tell everybody where they can find you on social media, and if you have a website, let them know that as well.
Yeah, you can definitely find me on social media. I'm heavily on Instagram. My Instagram ID is Miss_Sylvia Hoffman. That's MS_Sylvia Hoffman. The same thing on Twitter, Miss Sylvia Hoffman, all one word, MS Sylvia Hoffman. Facebook is pretty simple. Look me up, Sylvia Hoffman. I try to keep things simple so people can find me. But if you do want to know a little bit more about the sport, how to help out with sponsorships, because I am looking for sponsors right now, and just, you know, an agent. So if you would like to sponsor me, you can reach out to bob.teamhoffman, .com, and then you can also reach my website, sylvia-hoffman.com. So there's bob.teamhoffman and then sylvia-hoffman.com to reach me for any sponsorships or anything like that or endorsements. And then if you just want to learn about the sport in general, like, I got you. Reach out, send me a message. I'm quick to respond. If I don't, shoot me an email. That's pretty simple and straightforward.
One more time, Sylvia, where can people find you on social media? And, again, where can they find you on your website?
On social media, it's on Instagram, it's MS_Sylvia Hoffman. And then on Facebook, it's Sylvia Hoffman. I try to keep it simple. On Twitter, it's MS Sylvia Hoffman as well. And then I also have a website. It has my merchandise on it. You can get with that. And then you can also work with sponsors. I'm trying to work with sponsors to get stuff out there. You can reach me there at sylvia-hoffman.com. And then my email also, bob.teamhoffman.
Awesome. And you heard it from her. She is Sylvia Hoffman. She was a member of the two-woman bobsled team alongside Ilana Myers-Taylor as winning a bronze medal in the 2022 Winter Olympics in Beijing, China. Sylvia, this was a lot of fun. Thank you so much again for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us. And if ever you want to come back on, just feel free to let us know.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I was glad to just kind of get the information out there. It was fun. It was fun. Let's do this again.
Same here. We'll be back with more right after this.
Ilana Myers-Taylor. She's already won silver in monobob. Will there be another medal here?
Oh, break with Sylvia Hoffman was trying to get a strong last step there, but we saw her falter a little bit, so she had to pull back on the sled to get in. She's a very talented athlete. Started in 2018 as a part of the next Olympic hopeful television show. But the question is, did that harm their velocity?
There's a big margin of advantage. Look at that, almost 1 second. Ilana Myers-Taylor is growing this advantage.
Beautiful line there in the corner nine. Ilana is now getting up to the training run her competitors had, and she misruns being in quarantine. Still a second ahead. With a clean top, Ilana Myers is going to maintain this lead on her way to a bronze medal.
Ilana Myers-Taylor said, I can't relax. I can't be complacent. I only operate in one mode, and that is attack mode.
A clean exit of 13. Ilana is finding her way to another, a fifth Olympic medal for the U.S. bobsled team.
Ilana Myers-Taylor is guaranteed bronze. Into the lead by 0.8 seconds to Team USA. Hoffman and Myers-Taylor are going to stand on the podium.
There's magic that happens when you get together in a Vrba vacation home. It's the magic of spilled drinks and twirling hugs. It's inside jokes and loud shower singing and life advice and big sister real talk and laughing till you can't breathe. It's the feeling of relief because no matter who you are, there's nothing like spending time with the people you love. Vrba, a place for together. Download the app to find yours. At Vrba, we have vacation homes for you and whoever you call family. And by family, we don't just mean shared DNA. We mean the people who make you realize just how important family is and why you need a place to be one. Vrba, a place for together. Download the app to find yours.
All right, everybody, that's going to do it for the 300th episode of The Robinson Show. Once again, a big special thank you to Sylvia Hoffman, a member of the United States women's bobsledding team. She won a bronze medal in the two-woman bobsled competition with her teammate Ilana Myers-Taylor at the 2022 Winter Olympics in Beijing, China. So again, congratulations to Sylvia on that achievement, and again, thanks to her for being on the program. And until next time, remember, put God first in everything you do, and you can't go wrong. Until next time, stick to the script. I'm out. Peace, and thank you again for tuning in to the 300th episode of The Robinson Show. So long, everyone.